It's Thursday, August 13th, 2015. Welcome to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Coming up, a massive explosion at a Chinese port facility. China devalues its currency again. We'll find out some reasons why. And former President Jimmy Carter announces that he has liver cancer. A massive explosion erupted into the night skies over Tianjin, China, late Wednesday, injuring at least 300 people when a shipment of explosives blew up. There was no immediate explanation for the blast, although it is believed to have occurred in a shipping container. I spoke with VOA's Bill Ide in Beijing about the blast.
Well, so far we know that the state media is reporting that about seven people have been killed and hundreds have been injured. Many of those who are injured are in intensive care, according to reports that we're seeing. I just picked up a report from the Tianjin Daily and was going through that. It appears that this explosion may have occurred in a fireworks warehouse. The reporter that has put this posting up on social media says that the warehouse was perhaps going under some kind of renovation, and that it wasn't approved renovation, and that there were chemicals in the area where this in the warehouse, and that may have triggered the explosion. But right now, that's just something I'm just seeing, so it's unclear if this is actually the case, and this is what caused this massive explosion, which the plume of which there are tons of photos on social media here in China. It went about hundreds of meters in the air. Even one posting noted that a Japanese weather satellite picked up the explosion on its radars.
I understand the explosion was large enough to set off seismic warnings, too, that some people thought it might have been an earthquake. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, we're seeing many reports from residents, those foreign residents and local residents in Tianjin who really felt it was an earthquake. Also pictures on social media of inside people's homes where things have been knocked over because the explosion was so great.
And what is the Chinese government saying about investigating the cause of this? Have you heard anything official?
Nothing official yet on that. I'm sure there'll be a very in-depth investigation into it, but we don't see, or I'm not seeing anything yet on that.
Time now to check out what's trending on social media. International Edition's G. Abby Lee is in the studio to tell us what people are tweeting about this explosion. Hello, G.
Hi, Dave. Let's start with a Chinese state-run news outlet, Xinhua News Agency. It's on Twitter at XH News. It tweeted the breaking news about 5 hours ago, and the tweet reads like this. Hashtag breaking. Massive explosion rocks northern China's hashtag Tianjin, causing casualties unclear yet. That tweet got retweeted more than 2,200 times. Xinhua News has been very active on Twitter today, updating the news almost every hour since breaking the news. It later tweeted the explosion is reportedly caused by explosives at a container terminal. Dave, you mentioned earlier that the explosion injured at least 300 people, right?
That's correct.
Well, there's obviously no official death toll or number of casualties yet, and the difference between different estimates is quite significant. For instance, Xinhua News tweeted a nearby hospital received more than 50 wounded from the blast, and the number is expected to rise. CNN tweeted the same figure, quoting Xinhua. But CBS News tweeted an update saying at least 300 people are injured. Seven people are confirmed dead as of 30 minutes ago. Now, for our Chinese-speaking listeners, Weibo, China's answer to Twitter, can be another source of information. Weibo users are actively sharing pictures of the damage to their homes and workplaces from the explosion. Dave?
All right. Thanks a lot for that analysis, G. That was G. Abby Lee. If you'd like to send her a tweet, she is at JEEABBEYLEE. Coming up, former President Jimmy Carter announces he has liver cancer. This is VOA.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. China allowed the value of its currency to drop again Wednesday, prompting a second consecutive decline in major stock markets around the world. A weaker currency could boost China's economic growth by making Chinese-made exports less expensive for foreign buyers. Investors might be worried, however, that this intervention signals that growth in the world's second-largest economy is slowing more than they first thought. Beijing's change in currency exchange policy brought criticism from some members of the U.S. Congress, who say that it continues a practice that gives Chinese exporters an unfair advantage and hurts American jobs. Nicholas Lardy is a senior fellow with the Peterson Institute for International Economics in Washington. He told International Edition's Jeffrey Young that there are multiple reasons for Beijing's moves.
They're basically undertaking a process that will give a greater role to the market in determining the value of their currency. In the past, they've intervened to keep it from depreciating. The market pressure was pushing it down. They countervailed. They're now saying, we want to transition to a system in which the market has a greater role.
What is the advantage for China to do that?
Well, there are several advantages. The most important one is it gives them more flexibility in pursuing their domestic economic policies. If you have a currency, as they have had for quite some time, that's rigidly tied to the U.S., then you're much more constrained in what you can do on monetary policy. The second and very important advantage is that it is consistent with the advice that they have been getting from the IMF, and China's very anxious that their currency be included in something called the special drawing right of the IMF. This is kind of a good housekeeping seal of approval for a currency which they think will help the RMB to become a reserve currency. So in part they're doing this to help their domestic policy formulation. In part they're doing it to meet international expectations in order to become a reserve currency.
Is this part of China's keeping with, we are a global power and we will explore every avenue of presenting that and proving that?
Yes, I think so. They've embarked a number of years ago on what they referred to as the internationalization of the RMB, having their currency used more in trade transactions, having it be held by central banks. They've entered into a number of more than 35 swap agreements with other central banks. These are mechanisms in which other central banks can borrow RMB from the dollar. So they're doing everything they can to increase the visibility of their currency and the use of their currency in trade transactions, and increasingly now in international financial transactions.
By making the currency at least fractionally cheaper, does that make Chinese goods more attractive and therefore increase domestic production and jobs and activity?
Well, the amount they've moved the currency so far probably would have a very, very small effect. It's only moved 2-3 percentage points, and that won't have a big enough effect on prices to boost their economic growth in any measurable way. If the devaluation, the depreciation of the currency continued over a period of days and weeks, and it became a larger number, then at the margin it would help to increase their exports abroad and reduce their imports and thus contribute to economic growth. But we're a long way from that right now, and I don't think that's their primary motivation.
Nicholas Lardy is a senior fellow with the Peterson Institute for International Economics here in Washington. He spoke with International Edition's Jeffrey Young. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Former U.S. President Jimmy Carter announced Wednesday that recent surgery showed he has cancer and that it has spread from his liver. Mr. Carter, who is 90, announced the diagnosis in a short statement. He did not specify what type of cancer it is, only that it is in other parts of his body. According to the statement, a more complete public revelation will be made when the facts are known, possibly next week. The 39th president will undergo treatment at Emory Healthcare in Atlanta, Georgia. Mr. Carter underwent surgery on August 3rd to remove a small mass in his liver. A Carter Center spokeswoman said the surgery was elective and the president's prognosis is excellent for a full recovery. She declined to answer other questions at this time. Peace talks between Libya's warring factions ended Wednesday in Geneva without a resolution, but a United Nations envoy said the parties are determined to reach an accord on a unity government within 3 weeks. As the negotiations broke up, UN Special Envoy Bernardino León said the two groups, each with a claim to controlling part of Libya, noted the need for urgent progress on the security track of the dialogue process in parallel to the progress being made on the political front.
This is the first time the Congress attended the meeting. They have some reservations, some points. We say that we will deal with these points when we discuss in the annexes. And I think if they wanted to return back to the square one, it is no chance to make a deal with them. But I hope that the moderate and the realistic people in the Congress will understand that we should not miss this opportunity.
León said the two factions underscored their determination to complete the negotiations within the coming 3 weeks. Libya is split between two governments supported by armed troops fighting each other. The internationally recognized government is based in the eastern city of Tobruk, while an Islamist-backed government rules from the capital, Tripoli. A spokesman for Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton said that she is turning over the private email server she used to send and receive messages during her tenure as U.S. Secretary of State to the Justice Department. In addition to the email server, Clinton is also handing over a set of mini hard drives containing copies of thousands of her emails. Her campaign spokesman, Nick Merrill, said the former top U.S. diplomat has pledged to cooperate with the government's security inquiry, and if there are more questions, she will continue to address them. The FBI has launched an investigation into the security of Clinton's private email server after the Inspector General of the U.S. intelligence community said he found at least 4 emails that were classified at the time they were sent, including 2 that were deemed to be top secret, the government's highest classification level. Coming up, hundreds of migrants are crowded onto a Greek island. And there's good news for fans of the country music group Little Big Town. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
A newly updated index of sunspot numbers over the last 400 years may have eliminated a key argument used by those who question human-caused climate change. Some of those who suggest that climate change is not anthropogenic in nature contend that changes in the sun's activity are responsible for any increase or decrease in global temperatures. The new sunspot index, called the Sunspot Number Version 2.0, shows that solar activity has been constant over the past few centuries without any noteworthy long-term upward trends in solar activity since 1700. Creators of the new sunspot index say this means that any rise in global temperatures since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution cannot be attributed to an increase in solar activity. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. The influx of migrants from the Middle East to Greece continues, with about 100 to 500 landing on the Greek island of Kos every day, joining thousands already camped there. Greece has been overwhelmed by the wave of refugees and economic migrants, mostly from Syria, with more than 125,000 of them reaching the eastern Aegean islands this year. That's a 750% increase compared to 2014. Speaking to reporters Wednesday in Brussels, European Commission spokeswoman Natasha Berthaud said that the situation in Greece, particularly in Kos, is very serious And the EU is working with several refugee agencies, primarily with its border management agency, to assist.
Of course, the other side of this coin is that responsibility and solidarity have to go hand in hand. So hotspot teams will be deployed to Greece to help process the large number of asylum applications with the assistance of our agencies, the European Asylum Support Office, Frontex, the Border Agency, Europol, and Eurojust. And of course, should Greece request further emergency funding in the field of asylum and migration, we also stand ready to assist.
Earlier this week, the EU approved national funding programs of $528 million. Greece was expected to get its first disbursement of more than $33 million quickly. In addition to funds, the EU has also proposed a relocation system to transfer 16,000 people in need of international protection from Greece to other EU member states. Omar Mohammed is a 25-year-old Syrian migrant and English teacher.
40 people, it takes about this, in the sea, in the Black Sea, big waves, something take us right, other times left. But finally, we are so glad to reach this coast, finally.
EU leaders pledged earlier this year to provide Europe's Border Management Agency with additional assets to cope with the influx of people fleeing poverty and armed conflicts in the Middle East, Africa, and Asia. But for Omar Mohammed, he said that he's just glad to reach Europe after a harrowing journey.
I'm so happy to reach this coast. I've been trying for, you can say, for months. The last 2 weeks, I've been sleeping in the streets, in the mosques, in the garden. I need to make a shower right now. But I miss my parents and my little family in Syria.
Tens of thousands of migrants have arrived in Europe by sea this year alone, mostly in Greece and Italy. Many have died in the attempt. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd reporting from Washington. Fans of Little Big Town got some good news when it was announced that Jimmy Westbrook is healthy and the group can resume touring. Westbrook had to undergo vocal cord surgery and the group had to cancel several dates this year. Also, Jenna Kramer and her husband, National Football League player Michael Cowson, have announced that they are expecting a baby. I spoke with Country Hits USA host Nikki Strong about the news.
Just like so many artists are having problems, he was one of them. They figured, oh, you know, don't sing as much on tour. Just give your voice a rest. He went to the doctor. The doctor said, you need to have surgery now, otherwise you're not going to be able to do this.
And they had to cancel several concert dates. Millions of dollars.
Yes. Poof. And not only, they had to push back their tour to July, a July date, and then they had to push it back further because he wasn't totally healed. But the good news is he is healed now. He's been on Facebook talking. So it's great news. And, of course, the title of the tour is Painkiller, which I think is hilarious and ironic.
Yeah, well, the funny thing is, too, he went on Facebook and he was saying, okay,
yes.
I'm all better now.
Messing with folks.
It's kind of strange. Talking kind of like Mickey Mouse.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's okay. A joke.
I got a girl crush. Hate to admit it, but I got a heart rush. It's slowing down.
In other news from the country music world, Jenna Kramer is pregnant.
Yes.
Now, Jenna Kramer, for fans who don't know, I mean, you know her from her music, but you will remember a little while back, we talked about her and Brantley Gilbert.
Yes.
Were an item.
They were an item.
And then Brantley went back to Amber, his long-lost love.
Yes.
Who divorced her husband.
Yes.
Does this sound
to be
like,
with Brantley.
This sounds like we should be pouring alcoholic beverages.
Yes.
But to be with Brantley. And they got married. Now they're all happy ever after.
Mm-hmm.
And now Jenna Kramer, who is married to a football player.
Yes.
A big dude.
Yes.
So Mike is his name.
Yes.
She and he just announced that they are about to have a baby.
Yes. They recently got married. The baby is due early 2016. First time parents for the both of them. They were married in May after being engaged for 6 months. They met on social media, on Twitter, in fact. He favorited some of her tweets. And she said, who is this guy? She did some research on him. They met, and bam!
Oh, my goodness. See?
She got the boy and the man.
See? Well, see, that's her song. That's her song,
yes,
I Got the Boy,
exactly,
which is about Brantley Gilbert, is it not?
No, I don't think so.
There were rumors that maybe that was about Brantley because, you know, when he was young and immature and hadn't worked out all his stuff, he was with her.
Yes.
And now Amber, now that he's grown, now Amber gets the man.
Yes, it's possible. I could see the connection.
Oh, country music dish. Well, you know, speaking of connection, you can connect with Nikki. She is at @VOA_music. You can also listen to her show, which is Country Hits USA. You can find that on our website, www.voanews.com. Scientists with the European Space Agency say that comets could serve as cosmic laboratories in which some essential elements of life are assembled. You'll remember last November, the ESA successfully dropped a lander named Philae on the icy surface of a speeding comet. 9 months later, the agency's scientists are beginning to share the vast amounts of data that Philae collected during its first 60 hours on the comet's surface before its batteries depleted. Thanks for joining us for VOA's International Edition. We welcome your questions or comments. You can log on to our website, voanews.com. You can also send us a tweet. Tracy Carter directed our show. For all the folks here at VOA, I'm David Byrd. Thanks for listening.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
ISIL is continuing its assault on innocent civilians with its latest kidnappings in the central Syrian province of Homs, where the terrorist group abducted an estimated 230 people, including some Christians. ISIL's attacks have also resulted in the displacement of an estimated 2,000 people from nearby villages. According to the State Department's 2014 Human Rights Report, some communities under rule by ISIL experience specialized religious taxes, or jizya, forced religious conversions, destruction of religious sites, and expulsion of minority communities. Christians make up 10% of Syria's population of more than 17 million people. In February, ISIL attacked predominantly Assyrian Christian villages in the northeast Syrian province of Hasaka, where they kidnapped dozens of civilians, including women, children, priests, and the elderly. ISIL also burned and destroyed homes and churches. Those attacks displaced an estimated 3,000 people. The fact that ISIL deliberately targets civilians further testifies to its rampant criminality and brutality against all those who disagree with its toxic beliefs. ISIL continues to exact its evil upon innocents of all faiths, and the majority of its victims have been Muslim. People of all faiths and many religious leaders throughout the region have united in condemning ISIL's depravity, its mass killings, rape, sexual enslavement, lashing, stoning, crucifixion, and public murder of hostages. The violence in Syria has killed more than 250,000 people. The United States demands an immediate and unconditional release of all civilians taken captive by ISIL. To help bring an end to these horrors, the United States remains committed to leading the global coalition to counter ISIL.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.